on Bogoslav, changes have occurred within, you know, human lifetime.
Give and take, Bogoslav volcano continues to erupt, creating new land, but also taking some away. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, December 27th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, recent snows have upped the avalanche danger in Alaska's backcountry.
Because we do expect snow machiners and skiers to be able to trigger large avalanches.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly.
Seven people have been charged in a crackdown on methamphetamine distribution in Unalaska. A release from the Unalaska Department of Public Safety says for 3 months, UPD used confidential informants and undercover officers to identify local distribution networks. During the operation, officers obtained methamphetamine from 8 people. 6 were charged on December 23rd, including 39-year-old Sean Driscoll, 41-year-old Jeffrey Edwards, 28-year-old Ione Fasavula, 31-year-old Nicholas Howe, 28-year-old Christopher Oria, and Henry Zablin, 37 years old. A seventh person, Melissa McGlasson, 30, was arrested and charged over the holiday weekend. Charges against the 8 defendants include possession and distribution of a controlled substance and illegal possession of firearms. The investigation is ongoing, and the Unalaska Department of Public Safety expects to arrest at least one more person. A volcano in the eastern Aleutians has been erupting for the past week. Bogoslav volcano is on an uninhabited island 60 miles northwest of Unalaska. It's part of the Alaska Maritime Wildlife Refuge, but the headquarters and refuge manager are based in Homer. KUCB's Zoe Sobel looks into what it means to manage a volcanic eruption from hundreds of miles away.
Steve Delahanty lives in Homer. He manages the Alaska Maritime Wildlife Refuge, which includes Bogoslav Island. His reaction to hearing about the eruption, pure excitement.
On Bogoslav, changes have occurred within, you know, human lifetimes of people who are alive today, and even within the career of employees who work on the refuge.
You can see change on a human timetable.
Those of us, you know, who have been out there in the last 10 years got used to thinking as the new normal, well, it's going to look different again next year.
The Alaska Volcano Observatory says these recent eruptions have also produced new land, meaning Bogoslav is changing shape. What does it mean for the seabirds and marine mammals that call Bogoslav home?
They need these forces to occur for them to live, but at the same time, those very forces can change their home. It creates habitat and it takes habitat away.
Being more than 700 miles away from Bogoslav means Delahanty has to be patient.
And one of the odd things about being a refuge manager for a national wildlife refuge that is so remote and hard to get to is you can't just, you know, go out there this afternoon and see what's going on.
He says the soonest he'll see Bogoslav in person is this summer when the research vessel Tekla is back in the Aleutians. Till then, Delahanty will have to satisfy his curiosity with satellite imagery of the island. In Unalaska, I'm Zoe Sobel.
Heavy snow over the weekend in parts of south-central Alaska has forecasters urging caution in the backcountry due to heightened avalanche danger. APRN's Josh Edge reports.
3 feet of snow in Turnagain Pass over the weekend prompted forecasters to send a warning to backcountry enthusiasts, alerting them to treacherous avalanche conditions. Wendy Wagner is with the Chugach National Forest Avalanche Information Center. She says the avalanche danger in the area is still high.
Statistically speaking, the considerable danger happens after a storm. This is when most fatal avalanche accidents occur.
Wagner says that's because the calm after the snowstorm can lure people into a false sense of security. And especially with Turnagain Pass recently opening to snow machines for the season, Wagner urges backcountry users to stay out of avalanche terrain.
Because we do expect snow machiners and skiers to be able to trigger large avalanches. And these are the dangerous kind. These are 3 feet deep.
and they can bury and kill a person.
Wagner says the general rule of thumb is to let the snow settle for about 2 days after a storm before venturing out into the mountains. But for this storm, she says it needs more time.
That old surface was really weak. That snow was like a layer of marble sitting on the mountains. So we are expecting the snowpack to take a week, potentially.
Wagner says hazardous conditions are likely to persist until the next snowstorm rolls through. The weak snowpack, however, is not limited to the Chugach. Jed Workman is with the Hatcher Pass Avalanche Information Center. He says a thin base layer of snow and varying weather conditions have set a dangerous precedent for the rest of the season.
The early season snowpack that came in October rotted out due to cold, calm, clear conditions, and that will be a persistent weak layer for the entire season. All the snow that comes from now until the end of the season will be sitting on that very weak base. And it's not something that's just going to go away.
Predicting the weather in Hatcher Pass, particularly for precipitation, is difficult. But Workman says the Avalanche Information Center will be getting some reinforcements in late January as the National Weather Service adds the area to its recreational forecast.
It means that we're going to have a higher level of accuracy and more regular information about the weather for that very specific area. They're going to put a higher level of attention to it.
The Weather Service already produces a recreational forecast for the Chugach and Thompson Pass, giving area and altitude-specific information for snowfall, temperature, and wind. It's been a very dry winter for Hatcher Pass so far. If the weather pattern changes, though, and the area gets a big dump of snow, Workman says avalanche conditions would worsen dramatically.
It would get scary really fast because of this deep, persistent weak layer at the base of the snowpack.
And Workman emphasizes that there are some big differences between the snowpack in Hatcher Pass and the snowpack in the Chugach.
Hatcher Pass is more like Colorado. It has a very weak snowpack, generally speaking, and it can be safe to play in, but when there are problems, they tend to stay for a long time, and they're not always easy to discover or evaluate. Whereas in the Chugach, it's more of a maritime snowpack. Instabilities come in, and they're problematic for a day, a week, but then they heal.
Storms and new snow are predicted later in the week for both Hatcher and Turnagain Pass. In Anchorage, I'm Josh Edge.
A Soldotna state senator is expected to again push for reforms in Alaska's alcohol laws when the legislature convenes. Republican Peter Michicki in 2014 introduced legislation to make changes. The issue is expected to come up again in the new year. Since 2012, the Alaska Alcoholic Beverage Control Board has worked to redraft statutes that regulate alcoholic beverages. Board Chairman Bob Klein says alcohol statutes have not been revised in 36 years, and the board wants to update them. Last year, Michicki took parts of a revision bill and put them into a proposal that became law, but some elements remain to be addressed, such as new kinds of licenses and changes in fees and penalties. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a new court partnership between the state and a Kenai Peninsula tribe.
The model of the therapeutic court is not for the faint-hearted, but the reward on the other end is that you are substance abuse free.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com.
It's a fact. 85% of Alaska Native and American Indian people don't use illegal drugs. For more resources on building a healthy life, visit anthc.org/weare. This message sponsored by ANTHC, a nonprofit organization.
A spokeswoman for the Anchorage Police Department says a third man connected to a Christmas Eve double homicide is in custody. Renee Osted says 19-year-old DeAnthony Malik Harris was arrested Monday. He's charged with two counts of second-degree murder and single counts of armed robbery and burglary in the deaths of 32-year-old Danielle Brooks and 38-year-old Christopher Brooks. The couple was shot around 4 p.m. on December 24th at their northeast Anchorage home. Police say Harris, 20-year-old Jalen Franklin, and 22-year-old LaMarcus Mann knew Christopher Brooks and went to his home to rob him. Police say Mann first shot Danielle Brooks. During a struggle over his gun, shots mortally wounded Christopher Brooks and struck Harris. Harris was arrested Monday at an Anchorage hospital. Online court records do not list his attorney. Police arrested Franklin on Monday and Mann on Tuesday morning. Organizers on the Kenai Peninsula are putting together a conference marking the 150th anniversary of America's purchase of Alaska from Russia. The conference, celebrating the 1867 purchase of Alaska, will feature presentations that focus on Alaska Native history, Russian culture, and the U.S. presence in Alaska. The conference, scheduled for April 21st and 22nd in Soldotna, will be one of several events celebrating the 150th anniversary next year, including concerts in Anchorage, an art walk in Sitka, and a statue dedication in Juneau. The state is providing grants to organizations celebrating the historic purchase. The Fairbanks Memorial Hospital's new $88 million surgery center is on track to be fully operational this spring. Construction on the 90,000-square-foot facility began in spring of 2015 and is expected to be complete by mid-April. The new center will feature 7 surgery suites and many state-of-the-art features, including special lighting to help improve a surgeon's vision during laparoscopic surgery. Foundation President Jeff Cook says the surgery center improvements will help attract medical professionals to the area. The Juneau School District is one of the first in Alaska to make the AP District Honor Roll, a prestigious recognition for districts that increase the percentage of students who took and passed advanced placement tests. Juneau School District Superintendent Mark Miller explains how the test works.
A student takes a college-level course that we give at high school, and then at the end, they take a test. And if they score 3, 4, or 5, typically colleges will give them credit.
5 is the highest score. The College Board, the organization that administers AP tests, has an honor roll for districts that improve their school's AP track records in 3 ways over 3 consecutive years.
1, increase the number of AP tests given, meaning more students are taking more tests. And 2, while you increase the number of students taking tests, you increase the scores, average score of the students taking the test.
The district's percentage of students who took the exam had to go up by at least 11%. Larger districts have to increase participation by 4 to 6%. For its 3rd requirement, the district had to increase or maintain its percentage of minority students who scored at least a 3 on at least 1 exam. Miller believes having 2 separate high schools has made it easier to schedule more students into AP courses. He also thinks the district's achievement is a result of training more teachers to teach AP classes and the administration's work to make the tests available to as many students as possible.
It's really about pushing for equity, pushing to make sure all of us, our students, succeed, pushing students to do their best regardless of their background or where they come from.
Miller says the AP courses and tests prepare students for college-level classes, and if they score well, they could save thousands of dollars in college tuition. The honor roll dates back to 2011. According to the College Board, Juneau School District is the 2nd Alaska school district to make the list. Anchorage School District is listed on the 6th annual honor roll. 2 businesses in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta are applying for the region's first marijuana store licenses. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur reports.
The businesses are the Green Tree LLC in Bethel and Kuskokwim Enterprises LLC in Aniak. Both businesses are in the first week of their 3-week required public notice period. The notice informs the public of the business's intent to apply and says the public can submit comments or objections to their local government, the applicant, and the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Board. Once the applications are submitted, the Marijuana Control Board has 90 days to grant or deny a license. If the businesses do get a license, how the stores would get licensed marijuana or marijuana products like edibles are not yet resolved areas of local law. There are no licensed facilities for growing, testing, or manufacturing marijuana in the region. And without a road connecting stores to their products, businesses will rely on airplanes for transporting their merchandise. But airplanes are under federal jurisdiction where marijuana is illegal, flying over a state where it's not. So,
well, all of marijuana is operate at your own risk to some extent.
Cynthia Franklin is the director of the Alaska Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office. She calls the state's marijuana industry risky business.
We don't have any idea how the federal government is going to react to the reality of Alaska, which is that if you want to have a place in an area of the state that's fairly inaccessible, you might be violating federal, you know, transportation rules. But keep in mind, everything we're doing is federally illegal.
The U.S. Department of Justice has issued a memorandum saying that in states that have created robust marijuana regulations, if you are a licensed establishment operating in full compliance with these regulations, then you won't be a priority to prosecute. But then,
if you look at the end, it says, you know, it sort of disavows everything and says we can still do whatever we want.
And the memorandum, as mushy as it is, Franklin says, could disappear under Jeff Sessions, President-elect Donald Trump's pick for U.S. Attorney General. The marijuana business in Alaska is still young and in rural western Alaska still untested. And with a new administration taking over the Justice Department, how the state and federal regulations will coexist is still to be found out. In Bethel, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be safely. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. If you have an opinionated teenager in your home who thrives on proving a point, check out the Debating Alaska's Fiscal Future Scholarship Competition, organized by UAA's Seawolf Debate Program. More than $10,000 in prizes will be awarded. Debating Alaska's Fiscal Future gives the next generation of Alaskans a voice in the direction of our state. Contest details available at debatingakfuture.com. This message sponsored by Seawolf Debate.
Kenaitse Indian Tribe in Kenai is partnering with the state of Alaska to develop the state's first joint jurisdictional therapeutic court. Proponents say it's a step toward better support for community members, both Native and non-Native, who are struggling with substance abuse and the legal system. KBBI's Daisha Eaton has more from Kenai.
The state and the tribe signed documents to form the court this fall, but it's been in the works for years, and the issues it addresses came even earlier. Kenaitse Indian Tribe elder and tribal council member Lysia Blizzard says colonization resulted in trauma. For instance, tribal members once practiced their culture freely through hunting and fishing on the land, but with statehood came restrictions.
After statehood came, all hunting and fishing was very highly regulated. So I think that that had a lot to do with why there is an alcohol problem, and there has been for so many years, because men were no longer able to just go and hunt and fish what they and practice their cultural lifestyle the way they used to. And so there was a big loss in this community.
She says some tribal members turn to newly available substances. Some of her earliest community memories are of substance abuse.
To this day, it's difficult to talk about because there was so much alcoholism here, a lot of domestic violence and suicide.
Blizzard says families were torn apart as courts sent tribal children out of state to foster homes where they lost touch with their families, culture, and language. The tribe started their own court in the mid-80s when Blizzard says elders described what was happening with children as nantina, a Dena'ina Athabascan word meaning leaves on a tree being blown away. Since then, in an effort to keep families together and culturally connected, the court has handled civil China cases, or child in need of aid, custody disputes, guardianship, and conservatorship for elders and vulnerable adults, some domestic violence petitions, as well as marriages and divorces. The new court will add criminal misdemeanors. Blizzard says one of its first challenges will be one that is blindsided the community, heroin.
In this community, heroin is the drug of choice because it is cheap, and so it is destroying families.
Kimberly Sweet, chief judge for the Kenaitse Tribal Court, says the situation is having a serious impact on families.
99% of our children in need of aid cases come in and there's a drug and alcohol component to either the neglect or the abuse that's taken place. The state court was seeing the same things. We were having people in our China cases here that had a simultaneous criminal case going on over in the state court.
Alaska Superior Court Judge Anna Moran, who will partner with Tribal Judge Sweet during proceedings, says the state and tribe hope the court can turn things around.
It affects the mothers who are having their children taken away. It's affecting the fathers who are being incarcerated. It has a ripple effect throughout the community. And the ripple effect is significant. For every child who has their mother or father taken away and put in jail, that child learns bad habits and gets in a system or is in foster care, and then that ripples out to their children. We really want to try to stop that.
For Kenaitse Indian Tribe, it's a step toward greater authority in the state's criminal justice system, and it's a first-time partnership for the state of Alaska. Other tribal courts operate independently. The tribe's courtroom is located in a new building on the Kenaitse Tribe's wellness campus in Old Town Kenai. Reconnecting Alaska Native people with cultural values is part of the court's purpose, and the layout of the courtroom reflects this idea. There's a big table in the middle of the room. The judges are not separate from the participants. They all sit around the table together. To participate, people will have to opt in. If participants fail out of the therapeutic court program, they'll have to go back to state criminal court to face the full weight of state law. Moran says the new joint jurisdiction court is meant to be a model for other communities.
The model of the therapeutic court is not for the faint-hearted, but the reward on the other end is that you are substance abuse free, and maybe your charges will be dismissed, or you'll have a lesser offense that you're pleading to, or maybe even have them dismissed altogether.
Kenaitse elder Licia Blizzard says she doesn't want to see history repeat itself. The new court will focus on healing, not punishment, and she thinks that can help.
This therapeutic court, I believe, will give people a choice. If they are arrested and go to jail for consuming alcohol or drugs, they have a choice of either going to jail or going into the therapeutic court and make a big change in their life.
Blizzard says it's a step toward healing for her tribe and for the entire community.
This therapeutic court, I think, will really make a big difference in people's lives.
The court has already accepted a participant and will take additional cases in the new year. In Kenai, I'm Daisha Eaton.
The Juneau Public Library recently celebrated the addition of 30 audio interviews added to their collection. The recordings were done in Juneau, Haines, and Klukwan, and many focus on Alaska Native education. The initial inspiration for the project stems from StoryCorps, a national oral history organization that's received support from many local entities. Among the recordings is this conversation between scholar Lance Twitchell and writer and educator Ernestine Hayes. Professor Hayes was recently named 2017 Alaska State Writer Laureate. Here are excerpts from their conversation.
My name is Lance Twitchell, or Khoni, and my relationship to Ernestine Hayes is we are colleagues, we are partners in a fight against coloniality, and she would be my clan auntie and my clan daughter, is how I consider it, and very happy to be here.
I'm Ernestine Hayes. I'm 71 years old. Today is December 6, 2016. Here we are at the UAS Egan Library in Occoquan Territory, and I'm here with my colleague, Lance Twitchell, and we are, as he says, battling together.
Everybody who walks on this very soil is walking on a place where the Tlingit language was born. And if they're walking in other places and where those other languages were born, a big part of trying to be moving in a different direction than colonialism is saying, hey, you're not the only thing that's around. And hey, you're not the only important thing. And also, things didn't start with you. And so a big part is trying to educate this general populace to, so that they know, so that the indigenous is not a nameless, faceless thing that's frozen in time, that has no capability of doing modern things.
If we built a racist society, what would it look like? Who would be incarcerated? Who would be the dropouts? Who would have the highest suicide rates? Who would have the highest rate of parental termination? Whose language would be disappearing? Who would be sick from addiction and tuberculosis and diabetes if we built a racist culture? That's what it would look like, and that's what this looks like.
I think about the arrogance of the colonial world and then how that translates now to this total reluctance to see the blatant racism that carries through so many, just system after system after system. And it drives you nuts because you're like trying to talk to somebody and you just realize how they don't get it.
Well, I think some of us have to be warriors. And I just have defined a line where I stand. And I'll stand there as long as I can. And when I can no longer stand there, I will lay there. But I will not, you know, move back from that line.
Ernestine, you're one of the most important voices in my life, and so I like having this conversation with
you. Thank you.
Bethel's final liquor license is still up for grabs, and three businesses are competing to secure it. The three competitors are Cusco Liquor, the Alaska Commercial Company, and Bethel Liquor Store, LLC. The two businesses in the public notice phase have to submit their applications by the second week of January. If submitted in time, the applications will be reviewed by the Alaska Alcoholic Beverage Control Board, which will award the city's final liquor license. The city of Bethel is limited to only three liquor store licenses. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Zoe Sobel in Unalaska, Quinton Chandler and Scott Burton in Juneau, Daisha Eaton in Homer, Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel, and Josh Edge in Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Ron Zastro. Sean Dugan is our editor and producer. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. Alaska Pipeline Service Company, supporting Alaska's workforce and operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977. And by
GCI, keeping Alaskans connected to live the life they choose. GCI is an Alaska-born and raised telecommunications company and a proud supporter of Alaska Public Media.
Alaska's Tobacco Quitline reminds you that 88% of Alaskans don't allow smoking in their homes. A smoke-free environment helps prepare kids for a healthier life and a future free from tobacco. And it makes good economic sense. Secondhand smoke damages property, decreasing its value. Exposure to its toxins leads to disease and increased medical costs. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message brought to you by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.